¡Órale!
¡Sí, señor!
Bienvenidos and welcome to the Familia FFB Podcast. I'm Jorge Georgi Martin and Primos. Bienvenidos. Welcome, boys.
What's up, man? Thank you. Little beer time right now. Let's go.
Awesome. We're recording in the evening now, but this is going to go out on June 11th, Thursday. Gracias, everybody, for joining us. Estamos aquí a sus órdenes. If you haven't already done so, please check out our website, familiaffb.com, as well as our social media channels, at familiaffb on Twitter and Instagram, as well as our Familia FFB Facebook page. And, Primos, you know, it was kind of cool that when we were talking the other day how Latino culture has really had somewhat of an impact on sports over the decades. I think I really knew that we'd arrived, and it's really only in the last few years that, you know, you started seeing the accents on the back of jerseys, like for Hernandez and Gonzalez. I mean, that's cool. And the home run celebration. I think in baseball, the home run celebrations from the Latino players, aren't they cool on that one, boys?
Definitely.
Yeah, but I mean, they don't. To me, one of my favorite celebrations ever is Victor Cruz's salsa dance. When he does his, because that's how I feel like whenever I take the lead in fantasy, I just want to do a little salsa dance real quick. Like, yeah, every time my guy scores.
Pardon me while I vomit. That's salsa all over you.
I'm hoping to be doing a lot of salsa dancing for all the teams, all the players who score touchdowns.
That is the goal.
But it's funny, you know, it hasn't always been that way. You know, from working in baseball, I definitely heard a lot of stories from back in the day, players who were, you know, really encouraged to only speak English and not speak in their native tongue. One of the most prevalent stories was Roberto Clemente. When he got called up to the big leagues for the Pirates in 1955, you know, the media and announcers, they took to calling him Bobby. And he didn't like that. He kind of suffered in silence. Then all of a sudden he starts challenging for the batting title. And now
he gets to call the shots a little bit. Yeah. Yep. Oh, that's good. That's great. Exactly. Awesome. That's awesome.
Mi nombre es Roberto. And I think the cool thing about it is there's so many people who are about my age now who are named Roberto, white kids from Pittsburgh.
There you
so
go.
Love that. and it's funny. I think it was as there were more names that are becoming accepted. The Alou brothers, other Latino players throughout the generations. Jorge Horta, even though some announcers still called him George in the 70s. Players got to be more accepted. And I think it was kind of cool when I would hear. I mean, I'd start to hear this more in the late 70s, early 80s, when an English speaking broadcaster would be doing highlights and then would give perfect pronunciation on the Latino player's name in a highlight. So it was like, you know, that curveball is really dancing, and that's 15 strikeouts for Pedro Martinez.
That's awesome. So I always wondered whenever I think about that, because I always remember when I was a kid, you know, and you know, just like you said, it wasn't very prevalent, or, you know, it's almost unpopular, I guess you might say, to use the native, you know, their OG name. Like, I always remember, what was his name? Candy Maldonado on the Dodgers.
Candy Maldonado. Yep.
And I was always so puzzled. I was like, how is this guy named Candy? Like, this big buff dude, Candy Maldonado. And his name's Candy Maldonado. And for the longest time, I never really, I was like, how is this guy named Candy? And understanding his name was Candelario. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, why couldn't they just... And I'm sure being a big dude that he was, I'm sure going back to the same thing, like you said, Bobby Clemente, like, I'm pretty sure he would have preferred, just thinking out loud that, you know, why not just, my name is Candelario Maldonado, you know what I mean? But I'm just wondering, like, you know, no, man, you know, we're going to, you know, just to make it easy for the announcers, we're going to call you Candy Maldonado. So that's another example. It just stands out to me. Is I was always puzzled as a kid, like, how's this guy named Candy? Is that like a girl's name? You know what I mean? It was very puzzling to me.
Well, you know what? And it's funny, you know, in 1981, the Fernando mania that just took baseball by storm, there were players who called Fernando Freddy. And that became his nickname on the team. But it was very clear at that time that, you know, it was Fernando. And Vin Scully always called him by his full name. I mean, maybe occasionally, he would repeat a reference from another a player said, calling him Freddie, but he always called him Fernando. Jaime Jarrín himself once told me that he thought that there was nobody who created more baseball fans other than Babe Ruth than Fernando.
I don't doubt that at all. And I remember.
Yeah, the stadium was a celebration. Yeah. I'm sorry you missed it, Rick, because you weren't born for six more years. But
yes. Trust me, I've heard of Fernando Pena.
I remember living it. If you and I think part of that, George, is that these were the days before SportsCenter. You know, these are the days where, you know, if you were a Dodger fan and you were or a baseball fan and you had a chance to watch a Dodger game, whether it was a road game or whatever it was on Fox Network, you know, we had Channel 11 here in L.A. But when the game was over, you know, and Vince Scully was down there, you know, and Fernando didn't speak any English, you know, initially his first couple of years, you know, we were talking about, you know, 81, 82, 83. And after the games, after Fernando would play a game, Jaime Jarrín would be right there interpreting. Vince Scully would interview him, and Fernando would. And my mom would come over. You know, when the game was over, you know, my mom would go back to whatever. But if Fernando was being interviewed, you know, I'd call, you know, hey, Mom, Fernando's being – and my mom would come, my dad would come, and they would watch him, because that was like a proud moment that this kid from Mexico didn't speak any English but was dominating – in Major League Baseball. And it became, like you said, this huge thing where, you know, people that weren't necessarily baseball fans, like my mom wasn't a baseball fan, but when Fernando was pitching, she had a Fernando shirt, you know, El Toro, you know, like this, it was a big deal. So I don't doubt it that, you know, Latinos probably, you know, obviously there was no international, you know, television to you know, broadcast Dodger games. But if you had a chance to watch, you know, Fernando pitch and you were Latino, that was a proud moment. And yeah, for sure. I'm sure a lot of folks became Fernando diehard fans back then, for sure. I was one of them, for sure.
And it was special because, you know, to be a Mexican kid, you know, growing up in Pacoima, you know, to think that, you know, there was that name Valenzuela on the back of his jersey, and you felt like he was playing for us, and he was giving us a shot. And I actually got to tell him, you know, one time that I actually thanked him for making it seem possible for me to aspire to work in the big leagues. And I mean, I sometimes get emotional about it, to think that, you know, what that guy meant to me, what Jaime Jarrín meant to me, and to think that I, you know, I can call on them and they're, you know, they're friends now. It's something that's wonderful. I actually, one of the greatest games I ever saw was, I remember September 6, 1981, and Fernando threw a shutout that day. But he came up, and it was a 1-0 ball game in the seventh or eighth inning. And he comes up with the bases loaded, and he hits this low liner, and he hits a bad patch of grass. The ball just died, and the right fielder just kind of like, he was expecting a true hop, and he ran right by it, and the ball just died. And Fernando just cleared the bases, did a hook slide into third base. And I told him I was at that game, and he looked at me and he goes, he says, that was the only triple I ever hit in my career. And 17 years.
Awesome.
But the cool thing was, I had my tio Carlos, my father's brother. He came with us to the game that day. My tio Efren, my dad's other brother, took us to the game, and he's from Mexico. And that was the only time he ever went to a baseball game at Dodger Stadium.
Awesome.
I mean, to think that he thought that that's the way it is every time. And that was just a celebration. So
yeah,
it's just
huge, huge.
It's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing. Now, you know, I think, and actually Adrian Gonzalez has told me that, you know, Fernando was a big inspiration to him. And now, you know, him, Alex Verdugo, they ended up playing mariachi music before their at-bats. Nomar with Lowrider. I mean, Ricky, for you, I mean, what's it like for you to hear like those Latin rhythms when guys are walking up to the plate?
It's awesome. It's different, you know. It's nice to hear the different flavors out there, from merengue to the mariachis. And also it helps get them hyped up, and to see my abuelita Miranda when she was in her 90s watching Adrian Gonzalez go up to bat with the mariachi music, and she would be all excited. I didn't know she knew a lick of baseball, but she loved watching. It was another way to connect. and to show that there's more to baseball than just the game. There's like a lot of tradition. So it's really cool to see. It definitely gives the players a little bit more personality. I'd rather see, or I'd rather hear, you know, mariachis way more than Baby Shark doot-doot-doot. And everything like that, so.
That's probably flashbacks to thank God my girls didn't like the Baby Shark. They were in other stuff. I just missed it. But you know, and the other thing was, I mean, this is how far Latino culture has gone into, you know, sports mainstream. There is a minor league baseball team called the Flying Chancla. I mean, awesome. If you're Latino,
awesome.
I mean, seriously,
we have memories of the Flying Chancla when we were kids and we did something bad. We got that Flying Chancla.
Oh, I think I still got a mark somewhere on me from one as a kid. So, but yeah. And that's the thing, and I think that was a big inspiration to launching this podcast, to know that, you know, so many Latinos are into sports, into the NFL. 29 million of us are big NFL fans, and so many are into fantasy, and you know, hopefully we. We're just going to keep having fun and connect with everybody. And Rick, I know I'm cutting you off.
Sorry. Have you guys seen the Flying Chancla's logo? No.
It's awesome, isn't it?
I need that hat. I need that hat.
We're all going to get them. One final note. I definitely wanted to give a shout out to the NBA. You know, they have straight jerseys, you know, Los Lakers, Los Spurs. So definitely got to give a lot of love to the NBA for recognizing.
In Lancaster, we're doing we have the Lancaster Jethawks, but every Friday they do Heritage Week for then they call us, I think it's like the wind. I forgot what the wind is in Spanish. El viento de Lancaster.
Nice.
And like they do the logo, everyone wears the jersey and everything. So it's nice. It's making it more special.
That's very cool.
It's awesome. Well, you know, and for us as Latinos, what's more traditional than a little chisme? So how about some chisme, boys?
Chisme.
Well, the big thing was hearing today that the NFL and the NFL Players Association are talking about cutting down the preseason to 2 games. You know, the plan is still to start the season on September 10th. And that by cutting down on the number of games is actually going to increase the readiness for game day COVID testing and other protocols. I mean, Ricky, you know, you've actually conducted some of those COVID tests. How have you seen, you know, just in the 3 months since this whole thing is really broken out, that that everything's become more streamlined?
I mean, it's cool to know that now we can get an answer within 2 hours. If we could get within an hour, that'd be even better. But I mean, I like the idea that they're thinking of it. It's a huge, huge task ahead of them, because as soon as you test a player, that hour, 2 hours while they wait, they got to pretty much hang out by themselves, because if they're around anyone else, then test positive. Anyone they're around now has to get tested again. And then it's, you know, what if they're positive? How long until you let them play? Especially because the World Health Organization just came out with the fact that asymptomatic people are less likely to transmit the disease, or possibly can't transmit it, then, I mean, that says, well, then if they don't show any symptoms, will you let them play even though they're positive? So there's a lot of questions, but there's definitely the capability to do it. It's just, it's going to be interesting to see how they do it. But, I mean, they can do it, and trust me, they have a lot of money that they're sitting on that if they just figure something out, it'll all come to them.
I was gonna say that because where there's money, there's technology, you know, and I think we all understand that. And I think with the NFL, like you mentioned, Rick, you know, that'd be great if the test could be available in 1 hour. Well, you know what, we're probably gonna see that if the NFL has enough money to, you know, to go to whoever's creating these tests and making these tests, and the technology and the ability to be able to get a fast result. If anybody has the ability to do that, it's the NFL. I mean, you know, it's a $10 billion a year industry, corporation. You know, they have tons of money that they're sitting on. So, yeah, if anyone can invest into getting a test result in an hour or in half an hour, it's the NFL. So I would not doubt at all that by the time the season starts or preseason starts, that the NFL has available to them a test where the results are way quicker than what anybody else can get.
Yeah, hopefully it's, you know, it's a couple months away. So, I mean, let's hope. You know, I think the other thing that they're taking into consideration is the fact that they're looking back at 2011 when they had a lockout during the summer and there were no off-season workouts until training camp started. And one of the things that they found was that there were so many injuries during the preseason.
Hamstrings.
Well, it was 100%. It was hamstrings. It was torn Achilles. Torn Achilles. Just I mean, just some major stuff. And they think that by cutting down on the number of games, it actually gives the players a couple extra weeks to get into football. You know, get instead of being in shape, they're in the football shape doing football activities. So. Less injuries? Hey, sign us up. And plus,
yes.
Plus, how many of these games really matter? I mean, how many times do we see any of the elite players really in those games? Never. I don't think any.
And that's the thing. That's the thing about preseason. I think if you ask anybody, especially fantasy football players, the preseason, NFL preseason is just so darn frustrating. You know, first of all, you're trying to watch a game. You're obviously everywhere. We all try to get our research and figure out, who's the better guy. Okay, great. So you see your running back that you think is going to be the hot commodity for the coming year. He's going up against fourth stringers and fifth stringers. So when he breaks out for 125 yards and two touchdowns, or your wide receiver goes for 220 and three touchdowns, he's going against DBs that, last week were on the street, working at the post office or whatever. So how do you reconcile that? It doesn't make any sense. So yes, fewer games in the preseason. Let these guys just kind of get in shape on their own, training, practices and such, and just forget about the preseason. Even for the teams themselves, how are they going to gauge the talent of their running back if they really want to know how good he is if he's only going up in the preseason against fourth and fifth stringers? It doesn't make any sense.
Well, to me, I'd rather just keep the running backs healthy for the season. So, of keeping a running back healthy for the season, I think we all can turn down the veladora that Todd Gurley has passed his physical. Yay!
Finally!
Turn to the left and cough.
Yeah, exactly. So does this ease any concerns about his knee?
I don't know. Just because he's good. He's great to play. But, I mean, it makes you wonder, are they going to be easy on him? I don't know. He's still going to be a risky guy. I wouldn't want him to be my number one running back. And that's me not even wanting to have to worry about his knees. So the Falcons, they're going to definitely have to be more delicate, especially since they just got him. So I don't know. Would you guys put money on him?
Here's my thing. I never trust, if a guy passes a physical, what the heck does that even mean? I mean, we're getting stories out of Carolina that Cam Newton shouldn't have passed anything for like the last 3 years, yet he continued to play. There's guys that are just, pretty ticked off that, you're hearing stories, why they let him play. They did him wrong. Cam shouldn't have been playing. He was all jacked up, all kinds of injuries. He shouldn't have been playing. So I don't put any kind of trust into these quote-unquote team doctors that say a guy passed. Obviously, they're getting paid by the Falcons because they want Todd Gurley to play. So it's in the doctor's best interest to say that Todd Gurley can play. So I always go in with a little bit of, I'm a little bit worried, not necessarily, or I'll be a little bit pessimistic, maybe that's the right word, about what the doctors are saying.
I think they're going to run him to the ground. I think... They got a 1 year, $6 million contract. Why not just run the guy to the ground? If he does amazing, then they get to pay more, or they can just draft someone else. I mean, I think for them, it's going to be win-win to just keep giving Todd Gurley the ball. Who's going to beat him? Brian Hill? Like, come on.
Yeah.
So
Judge,
I think
Judge Ito.
It's just one of those. Can Todd Gurley, just because he's healthy, can he carry a team on his back again? But or do the Falcons have enough weapons to where Todd Gurley doesn't have to? I mean, I don't know. It'll make your heart feel good if he does.
Like I said, he passed the physical. That doesn't mean he can be the bell cow. All it means is that he passed the physical, whatever that means. That's where I'm coming from.
Yeah, he lost a step. or yeah. a half a step. He did not have the same burst last year that he had the year before. His yards per carry went down. And to me, that's a big indicator of him coming back to earth a little bit. If I were to take him, I would make sure that I had I wouldn't take him as my first running back. I would definitely at the very least have him as my second or even third running back and make sure I've got plenty of depth at both running back and receivers so that I can, you know, flex out, because I think I wouldn't be surprised if, he gets run into the ground in like week 12 or 13 thereabouts, that he's just kind of like he could be done for the season. But I'd be able to ride him because I think that's going to be a good offense, and he's going to be I'd be riding him until that point because I think that's going to be a good offense and he's going to get plenty of opportunity because really there's nobody else. And, you know, speaking of that offense, Matt Ryan, Matty Ice, he called Hayden Hurst, you know, one of the fastest and most athletic tight ends that he's ever played with. Wow. And, you know, he played with Tony Gonzalez. He played last year with Austin Hooper. Do you guys think that we could see the same type of numbers that Hooper had last year?
He's just hoping he blocks for him. I would say that too if I was Matty Ice and I was that old or getting to look old, long in the tooth, as they say. I mean, he does look good. As talking of Hurst, he looked good. He's never performed up to his potential, so he's very interesting. But I mean, yeah, because Matty's played with Tony Gonzalez, I'm like, come on, Matty. Don't be saying stuff you shouldn't. But I get it. He's new. He wants to boost the guy's confidence. So, and the guy's still young. Hurst is still young. So, I mean, it's an interesting sleeper pick for anyone who loses out on the first three or four tight ends. Hurst is a nice one to grab.
Yeah, sure. I mean, yeah, seeing what Austin Hooper did last year, Matt Ryan likes to toss to the to his tight end. So, and I don't have a problem with Austin Hooper there. I think he'll do well. Yeah, saying that he's one of the fastest and most athletic tight ends he's ever played with, a little bit of a embellishment there probably from Matt Ryan, just, kind of oozing a little bit just to maybe boost a little bit of the confidence in the young Hurst. But I think he'll have a fine year. I don't know if I'll be looking at Hayden Hurst as any of my picks this year. He's like probably way beyond, top 12 tight ends, but we'll see.
Yeah, he might be that guy you pick if you just decide to punt on tight end and you just kind of wait on him and hope that, you get, 5 or 6 TDs out of the guy, maybe 800 yards, and hope that you're really strong in running back and wide receiver and quarterback. So it perked my ears up a little bit. So
right.
It made me kind of look at him, give him a second look, not just as a blocker, but maybe as a receiver. So
sure.
Hopefully, he might be an underrated pick. And, speaking of underrated, it's time for Arriba Abajo.
Let's go. Arriba Abajo.
Our overrated and underrated teams of the AFC. And Hector, you had an interesting pick for your underrated team, even though a lot of people are picking them to win their division. Tell us why you think.
No, I mean, obviously, yes. I just think they're a little bit underrated. I don't know if they're necessarily getting the credit just yet. But I think that'll come. I think that's underrated as far as preseason goes. I think once the Bills start working together and getting some wins, which I think they are going to do, I think it'll be pretty quick before they lose that underrated label. I just love the Bills offense. I mean, they were already good last year. They made a playoff run. Josh Allen is just the man. He's going to be all over. If I have any chances to pick up Josh Allen this year, I'm definitely going to do it. The guy had 9 rushing TDs last year. He threw for 20. Yeah, 9 picks, but I could deal with that. His offense is just I love me some Stephon Diggs. I've always been a fan of John Brown when he was playing over at Arizona with the Cardinals. The guy's fast, and Cole Beasley. I'm a fan of Cole Beasley. He reminds me a lot of our guy over here at with the Patriots. What's that?
Edelman.
Yes, he reminds me so much of Edelman. He reminds me so much of Edelman. He's that safety valve. He goes across the middle. He's going to get those balls. If Josh Allen runs into any trouble, he's going to get those. He had 6 TDs last year. John Brown, 6 TDs last year. Stephon Diggs, even though over there with Minnesota, he also had his own 6 TDs last year. So I'm looking for a lot coming from the receiving core over there at Buffalo. Devin Singletary, Love him. I think he's going to have a solid year. Yes, obviously, you could call it Josh Allen did vulture some TDs from his running back, but I'm looking for a big, big year from Devin Singletary coming up this year. I'm going to have him on. I'm going to be watching him as well. I'm going to pick him up wherever I can if I can get some good value out of him. Bills over under. They're sitting at nine wins from VegasInsider.com. I think they'll go above that. I have them beating on their schedule. I have them beating the Jets. I have them beating the Dolphins, Raiders, the Jets again. I have them beating the Patriots and the Chargers. I have them beating the Niners, Broncos, Patriots again, and Dolphins. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. That's already 10. So I think when I'm going to Vegas, I have a reservation coming up in July at the Park MGM. Shout out to Park MGM.
Not a sponsor yet. So
exactly, not a sponsor yet, but you know, I'll be going over there, hanging out for the weekend, putting in all my picks, just like my other pick of Panthers at 5.5 wins. Jeez, I'm going way over on that. I'm gonna put some money on that. Put some money on the Bills over the 9 win over under. So what do you guys think? I'm all over. I'm drooling over the Bills offense this year. Underrated for now. As the season starts, they're gonna lose that label for sure.
I think they got a lot of hype, and I still think they're underrated. Yeah, they got a lot of weapons. They're quick and they're strong. I love Devin Singletary. I liked what I saw last year. So it's like now he's going to be the lead back there. Zach Moss isn't going to steal any carries, but he's going to be a nice weapon to have also. And if Josh Allen can keep it up, this team's going to be hot. So, yep. I mean, yep. I think they're going to be really sneaky. Like, everyone on their team is going to get drafted lower than what they're actually going to perform.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, I think a lot of this. I think they're underrated. They're not underrated as a football team. I think they've got a wonderful offense, defense, one of the best defenses in the league. They've got a great offensive line, so they're going to open up holes for Singletary, Moss, Allen. I think it really comes down to, from a fantasy perspective, I think Allen is going to be kind of like that second tier quarterback who can jump into a QB1 and be one of the highest scorers, because I said it before, I think he's a Cam Newton type. And if he gets his passing yardage up beyond 3,500 and get his and keep his rushing yards in the 500 range and still vulturing touchdowns, maybe getting his touchdown passes 25 to 30, I think you're talking about one of the best quarterbacks in fantasy right there.
Yep.
I do like Singletary. I'm glad they went running back, because the fact that he did miss 4 games because of injury. I think when it comes to the receivers, I think Beasley takes a big hit from the acquisition of Stephon Diggs.
Right.
And down the road, guys, when we do another Corazon Roto, I've got a great one that involves John Brown. And it's one of the all-timers, but I don't want to do that. But to me, it really comes down to, from a fantasy perspective, how much of a big step does Josh Allen take in his third year in the league? And will Singletary become that single back? So I'm optimistic. I think Bills Nation is going to take a big victory lap at some point. I don't know if they're going to be playing all the way late into January, but I think they're going to win the division. And Ricky, you're up. I think it was no surprise that you picked the Chargers as your underrated pick.
Oh, obviously, because they're so hot. I mean, I love their jerseys right now. I just love the way they look. I think looking at it last year, you say, okay, what happened to them last year? Philip Rivers crapped the bed. It's almost like he wanted out. People are saying that we're not getting enough fans. Whatever. We're going to have a brand new stadium this year. Last year, we lost so many games by a touchdown or less, and we're still only a few games from being 500. So it's like this year, I just feel like, who cares who the quarterback is? I hope it's Tyrod Taylor the whole year, because that means we're doing good the whole year. But if Herbert has to come in, the line did get better with the addition of Trey Turner. We got rid of Okung, but Turner's younger, more potential right there. Our defense is going to be sick, because we still have Casey Hayward. We still have now we have a healthy Derwin James, who didn't play last year, really. And we also got the new addition let me see right here, of Chris Harris Jr. So it's almost like we have too many secondary people. And then we still got Kenneth Murray from Oklahoma this year.
You never have too many when Patrick Mahomes is in your division.
Right, but we got Bosa to hunt him down.
Right.
So at least we have that. But and we proved before that we can beat Mahomes. We only lost by 7 points last time we played him. And it just the team's got weapons. Eckler's shown he can be the lead back. He's going to be relied on a lot this year. But, I mean, the Chargers play the Bengals. They play the Jets, the Dolphins, the Raiders. I don't care for the Raiders. I don't think the Patriots are going to be that good. The Falcons, I don't think, are going to be that good. So the Chargers can easily hit 500. And I think fantasy-wise, there's so many weapons. I haven't even talked about Keenan Allen or Mike Williams or Hunter Henry, but it's like, this team's sneaky. Don't let last year fool you.
I love the weapons, except for the quarterback. I just think that it just comes down to the fact that I took a harder look at Tyrod Taylor's Cleveland year, where he did the handoff to Baker Mayfield, which I think is really what's going to happen here. And he was not very good. And I mean, granted, the offense was probably dysfunctional. He's got better coaching here with the Chargers. I think it's an amazing defense. I'm going to hold out hope that the offensive line does take that step forward, because I think that is the difference between this being a team with good weapons to being an elite offense. Because I think if they're really good, they will make whoever is quarterback look good. I'm intrigued by Justin Herbert. I think at some point, I put the over-under at 8 games before he takes over. It was 4 games when Tyrod Taylor gave the job to Baker Mayfield, so I'm giving him a few more games. But again, I love the weapons otherwise. I don't love the quarterback, and I worry that that's going to hurt the weapons.
So what do you think, Rick? The over-under for wins for the Chargers next season, according to Vegas Insider.com, is 7.5.
Nine wins easily.
Easily. Okay. So if I put all my money on that, on 9 wins or over the 7.5 wins, and that doesn't happen, you got to buy me beer, or how do we do that?
It's the one time I put my heart, not my brain. Okay. So okay. It's one time I might be wrong.
Okay. Well, you know what? Because it's the heart.
They look hot. They look hot, man.
All right. Well, speaking of hot, let's go down to the Houston Texans. Deshaun Watson, you know, coming off a great year. George, you have them as your underrated. So what do you think about the Texans coming up as why they are underrated for the coming season?
Yeah, I think people are echando le caca a lot on the Texans.
D-Hop left? Is that maybe part of it?
I think it's all because, well, D-Hop, and they inherited David Johnson, and I think people are throwing dirt on Brandon Cooks when he's only like 26 years old. And I keep coming back to the fact that Deshaun Watson is one of the 5 best, maybe even one of the 3 best quarterbacks in football on a given year. And he had an okay year last year with 3,800 yards and 26 TDs. I think he's going to take a step up. I still like Brandon Cooks to bounce back. I will, you know, light a veladora that Will Fuller plays more than 11 games, that his hamstrings hold up.
Yes, he hasn't played a full season yet, I don't think.
His rookie year, he played 15. I will say, Primos, I had Will Fuller active for that magical game on October 6th where he went for 14 receptions, 217 yards, 3 TDs.
I remember that game.
And he actually had 2 TDs called back on penalties. So. Wow. And those were all the 3 TDs that he scored the entire season. And every time that he's in the game, it seems like Deshaun Watson has a big game. So I'm optimistic about that. I don't love David Johnson, but I think he's going to be a guy who could be that number 2 running back that on a team that you're kind of happy that he's there. He'll get you 1,000 yards, and he'll get a bunch of yards out of the air. So that's why I keep looking at it. I mean, people keep seeing one, and it seems like people want to downgrade the Texans. I keep wanting to call them the Oilers. Sorry. but I think they're gonna be from a fantasy perspective, I think there's a lot of players that to like on there, and I think their defense isn't gonna be very good, so they're gonna be in some shootouts. And hey, if I've got Deshaun Watson pitching to my guys, I like my chances that my guys are gonna score.
They have some of the biggest disappointments on that team, like in fantasy. They have Deshaun Watson, who was a disappointment for some. When they needed him most, he either got injured or he didn't show up. Brandon Cooks, we all know his history. And then you also have Will Fuller. We already talked about how he hasn't done a full year. And then David Johnson. How many people did he disappoint whenever he got injured? So I just feel like it's, I don't know. Like, I'd hate to say what if, but you know what? One of them's not going to play the whole year. And those are the only real weapons I see that they have. So, I don't know. I think they deserve to be under seven games won.
Well, we shall see. I don't know. I like the fact that, you know, I always think back to Kenyon Drake. The fact that he was kind of the David Johnson, you know, coming out of Miami. Nobody wanted him. It seemed like he was, you know, quote unquote, washed up Kenyon Drake. The guy didn't do anything. He was such a disappointment on the Dolphins. And then he comes over to the Cardinals, and the guy just blows up. So David Johnson, the guy was a stud for, you know, for a couple years, and there's something there. There's David Johnson, I think, still has it. So yeah, I agree with you, George. I think David Johnson is, I think he'll have a good year. He'll have a bounce back. He'll be the Kenyon Drake on the Texans this year that Kenyon Drake was when David Johnson was there. You know what I mean? So I think it comes full circle. I think David Johnson has a solid year, and I think he reverts back to his big years a couple of years back, and I think he helps the Houston Texans offense out a lot, and I think he'll have a solid fantasy year.
And he doesn't really.
Both of you are drinking crazy juice because that's not going to happen.
Well, he has no competition for the
rookie. Right, that's it, exactly.
So I mean, he'll be okay. I mean, I'm not expecting 1,500 yards.
No.
Yeah, you know, I'm like.
But solid. I think he'll be solid.
Yeah. Maybe one last year. So now we're going to overrated. Ricky, you're leading us off with your pick. Tell us why you've got that team over there in Tennessee. As overrated.
I love Derrick Henry. Don't get me wrong. Dudes, if he can get another 1,500 yards, God bless his soul. I hope he does it again because he's definitely going to be the leak of aisle. Who's behind him? Nobody even knows. But other than that, like, yes, A.J. Brown, Corey Davis, I love it. But I don't think Ryan Tannehill is going to be as good as he was. People weren't expecting that from Tennessee. And I think this year they'll know how to attack Ryan Tannehill. And I don't know. I just think that as soon as you attack that, as soon as you make this team have to chase you in points, the sooner you can get Derrick Henry, you know, they're not going to throw Derrick Henry the ball because they don't trust him with the ball as far as in the air. So if they can just take a quick lead, Tennessee's going to have to rely on Tannehill. And A.J. Brown's quick and all, but I just don't see Tannehill being able to connect all the pieces this year. I just feel like last year was a fluke, and a lot of people are going to overrate them because of Derrick Henry and because of how far they got into the playoffs.
But I'll jump on. Go ahead.
Well, one last thing was just their schedule. You know, they still got to play the Bills twice. They play the Vikings. They get to play crappy teams like the Jags, but they're still going to play the Broncos. They're going to play the Lions, who are better than what a lot of people know. The Texans, which you guys like. I don't think anything, but they still got to play the Packers. So they got a lot of games where I can see them falling behind quickly. It's like, this team's. They might get some stats for Henry, but no, they're not going to win very many games. Not as many as they're projecting.
I don't know. I don't necessarily agree that Tannehill was a fluke last year. Same way that Kenyon Drake came out of Miami and blew up. No, I mean, I don't know if it's something in the water in Florida. I don't know, but
use Kenyon Drake's name one more time this podcast.
I know, right? I'm just saying. Tannehill also came from the Dolphins, and he blew up. And watching what he did with A.J. Brown last year, I can't see how that's possibly a fluke. I mean, the guy, Tannehill, he's a vet. The guy's been in the league I don't know how many years now. So it's not like all of a sudden, you know, defenses are going to all of a sudden know how to, defend Ryan Tannehill. They knew that last year. Tannehill's been in the league for a long time.
The new defense is a new team syndrome.
Regardless, the defense is new last year, how to defend Tannehill, and he still lit him up with A.J. Brown. So that, I don't necessarily agree with that argument. They knew how to defend him last year, and he still jumped all over them and threw all kinds of – he threw, what, 22 TDs with only six INTs, and A.J. Brown's, you know, 19.
He's not going to duplicate that.
I'm not saying he's going to duplicate it. I'm not saying he's going to duplicate it.
If he goes down a little, it's going to ruin the Titans. Why?
I don't think so, because I think Henry is going to blow up. I think he's going to have the same or better year than he had last year. So be ready. I'm not saying the Titans are going to be like this awesome, great team. I just think they'll be a little bit better than the way that you described.
So how many wins then? Over nine?
I think they'll get 9 wins. I think they'll get 9 wins. 9-7, I think they can do, or better. But I think 9-7's with Derrick Henry. Jesus, I don't see how they can't win 9 games.
Yeah, they'll get a couple wins off the Jaguars, and then maybe get split with the Colts and the Texans. So, okay. To me, the thing with I'm kind of with you on Tannehill coming back to earth, because I look at that QB rating 117.5. I'm like, and the completion percentage of 70.3. He was never close to that. I don't think you can ride just Derrick Henry. I think Tannehill is, for them to take another step and be playing in the AFC Championship and maybe beyond, he needs to take that next step. He needs those numbers to be real. And I'm a little worried that they're not real. I think they were a little inflated, and that's the thing. Maybe the NFL defenses figure out a way to scheme him a little bit. I'd like to. He's the only one I think is overrated. I think A.J. Brown's going to take a second year bump. I think Derrick Henry's phenomenal, and he's going to he's going to have another solid year, because he was underutilized, as Hector knows very well.
Yes. So, don't remind me. The first couple of years he was on my team, he did nothing.
Yeah. So I could see. And overall, they're a good football team. They've got a good defense. I think that they could be a nine, and it seems like whoever wins this division always does it at 9-7. So, but yeah, I agree that Tannehill is the linchpin on this. And if he's elite again, they're going to be a 12 win team. If he's not, they're 8 or 9. And I think that over under numbers is really set.
It's right on. Yeah, Vegas is sneaky. Vegas knows. So 8.5 is probably like right there. They're probably going to end up with either 8 wins or 9 wins. So Vegas knows. They know what they're doing. Those guys are smart. But they're not smart when it comes to the next team that we're going to talk about.
And I was really surprised with this next team, because I was like, how can this team be overrated? They suck. And then I see how many wins are projected. I'm like, oh my God, really?
Okay, please. So,
Hector, go ahead with the.
Yes. let me go off on my, I don't know if you'll call it a tirade or my soliloquy of sanity, maybe you want to call it that, or insanity. So VegasInsider.com has the Cleveland Browns over under at 8 wins. And I'm going through their schedule, and I'm picking like 3 wins and maybe 4 wins. I mean, they're playing the Ravens twice. They're playing the Steelers twice. They're playing the Bengals twice, which I think they'll split that. But they're playing the Titans, which I think they'll lose. I think so. The schedule is very challenging, which for a team that to me is completely dysfunctional. They have a new head coach in Kevin Stefanski. As we all know, and I think that says a lot, the idea of a brand new head coach coming into a dysfunctional offense, which with a lot of divas, I think is going to be challenging. I mean, the Packers had a new head coach last year, and it took Aaron Rodgers the veteran and the professional that Aaron Rodgers is, it took the Packers a good month to really get into sync with that offense that their coach was running. So I think it's going to take the Browns even longer with a brand new head coach. I don't like the Browns offense at all. I think Baker Mayfield, you know, I think we've mentioned it before that, you know, there's some pundits out there that are saying he'd be a great backup QB, but he's not anywhere. He shouldn't be really regarded as a starting quarterback in the NFL. And I don't disagree with that. Based on what we've seen, the guy is afraid in the pocket. He's scared. Last year, 22 TDs, 21 INTs, 78.8.
Ay, mijo.
That is like, oh my God. You know, and you know, guys like OBJ and Jarvis Landry, they were teammates back at LSU, and we don't know what kind of, you know, if there's any kind of sibling rivalry there going on because they know each other so well.
No, they're buddies.
I know they're buddies, but at the same time, they're very competitive.
Oh, of course.
So, you know, Nick Chubb, I love Nick Chubb. I'm not going to, like I said before, I'm not looking at anyone who wants Nick Chubb, go ahead and get him. Austin Hooper is an interesting idea, you know, back at tight end, coming from Atlanta, where he did very well with Matt Ryan. But again, he doesn't have Matt Ryan. He has Baker Mayfield, the guy, in my opinion, who would rather be an actor.
Another mouth to feed.
He would rather be an actor and make, you know, TV commercials for car insurance than to play football. So, that's my take on the Cleveland Browns. I see them again winning. The wins that I have for them next year are Redskins, Jets, and Jaguars, and possibly one win against the Bengals. So they're at that over-under at 8. I'm going to Vegas. I'm going to put a lot of money on the Cleveland Browns not getting 8 wins, and I think I'll be very happy at the end of the season.
And I agree with you 100%. There's nothing I got to add to it. I mean, I think if anything, if Kareem Hunt goes low, he might be a nice little. He's the first handcuff I would want in the whole draft, probably. Right. But other than that, I would let someone else have to worry about that headache. I don't want it on my team.
Yeah, Chubb is going to get his numbers eaten into, and his carries and his numbers eaten into. A lot of this, I mean, it comes down to Baker Mayfield. Is he really an elite quarterback, or is he not? And one thing, and I heard this on Chris Sims' podcast, he was talking about the fact that Baker Mayfield had some of the best numbers in play action, and that Kevin Stefanski called the play action pass a lot in Minnesota because Kirk Cousins really sold it well. So that has me thinking that it could happen for Baker, but really this is a make or break season for him. And if he's going to be a player in this league, he's got to come up big time. Because if not, I could see Cleveland, you know, starting to look for its next quarterback at that point. Because he's got so many weapons around him. And if he doesn't make this offense work, it's going to be tough for him. I'd like to think because
it's the same story though. So,
and you know what? And it's funny. I don't think any team has more people rooting for them than Cleveland, and in media members, and just, you know, it's almost like they're the Chicago Cubs before they won the World Series in 2016. Now it's Cleveland is kind of like that lovable loser. And
right.
I wish they weren't as dysfunctional. I wish they were a rock solid organization like a Pittsburgh or a Baltimore I think those are two of the most, you know, there's a lot of continuity and you see that on the field. So I hope I've got some Cleveland Browns fans as friends. So, but I'd like to get OBJ on a discount. I think he's the one guy I think that could really outperform his ADP. But really,
that's
everybody else, I think.
Expensive lottery ticket.
Well, if I'm getting him in the third round, I'm going to take that chance. I don't know if I'm going to draft him in the second, but if
he's still going to be your top wide receiver,
right?
It depends.
I'll leave him there for you.
Me and Rick will leave him there for you.
All right. If I get him in the fourth round, then I'm really excited.
There you go.
Well, you know, one team that's got a lot of heat around it, Denver, the Broncos, and they were my pick for the overrated team. And it to me, not because I'm not excited about all the players that they got. I think Jerry Jeudy's going to be a fine player eventually. To me, really, I think the guy who might be the only fantasy standout on this team this season is Cortland Sutton. Drew Locke, I don't know if I'm ready to declare him to be the next all pro after 5 games. And the backfield is going to be a mishmash between Melvin Gordon and Philip Lindsay. I mean, Royce Freeman got 175 touches last year. So how many of those are going to go to Gordon? How many of those are going to go to Lindsay? And all those rookie receivers, it's very usually what last year we had 3 maybe four rookie receivers that did well, and all of them did well in the second half, not in the first half. So to expect a Jerry Jeudy to come in and do what Randy Moss did in 1998, if you guys want to look at what Randy Moss did in 1998, that's why he's in the Hall of Fame. I just worry about all those rookie receivers working out. And if none of them do, then it's scary. I mean, Locke has been working with Jeudy and KJ Hamler and Phillip Lindsay during the off season, doing a lot of in-person workouts. But again, that just has me wondering, is it going to be enough? I like their chances in 2021. Believe me, all those guys growing up, I think they're going to be good.
And right. I think you're right. They're thin on tenure. I like Fant. I like Sutton. Everyone else under that, it's like you're still working with like a new quarterback. He's still new in Drew Locke. I love that they got Melvin Gordon and Phillip Lindsay. Those are two awesome and quick running backs. But they're both running backs that I think look better when they develop a rhythm, because these guys aren't bruisers. So you definitely want Melvin Gordon or Lindsay to start finding their lanes, and they need rhythm. And I just feel like that's what sucks about this team is, I don't know, I just feel like they're not going to have the rhythm with them. And they look really good on paper. They look fast, but they're just not going to do it. And I'm with you on that, Georgie.
Yeah, I mean, the Drew Locke played 5 games last year. He did well. You know, in 5 games, he threw 7 TDs to only 3 INTs. John Elway has talked him up a lot. You know, I think he'll have a fine season. But I'm a little bit worried about the youth. Like you said, Rick, they're not tenured receivers. The team, you know, as a whole is pretty young. Drew Locke is young, and Fan is young, and Sutton is young. So we're going to have to wait and see. Yeah, Gordon is kind of the veteran, but, you know, he's a running back. So I don't know. And I'm seeing that Vegas Insider has the over-under at 8. Wins for Denver. I mean, they're in the same conference as the Chiefs. They're going to play them, a couple times next year. And the Raiders a couple times. I don't know. I would definitely put my money on Denver not getting to 8 wins. So yeah, we'll wait and see. If Drew Locke puts together a solid season, they may challenge that, but that's definitely a wait-and-see approach. Only 5 games last year. We're going to definitely have to wait and see.
They're not going to hit 500. There's no way. There's no way.
Yeah.
Are you going to hold that? Are you going to bet your dad on that one, Rick?
Heck yeah.
Easy money.
Chargers. I sense a father-son beer bet. Chargers and Broncos.
Be more than a beer bet. Someone's car has gained a new sticker.
I don't love that.
There you go. Gotta love that.
And I know Cortland Sutton is going to still be good. So yes. he's going to be good. A lot of people are looking for Noah Fant to explode. Maybe not like George Kittle, like we talked about in the last episode, but we'll see. We're going to see. I like them in 2021, but I think this is going to be a year for them, even with all the hype. So
yeah.
We shall see.
Bueno, familia, eso es todo for our show. Thanks again to Anchor.fm for being our hosting network and making our independent podcast, sending it out into the familia community. Please subscribe and leave us a review on Spotify, Apple, Google, other podcast platforms. And remember to follow us on our social media handles and check us out on familiaffb.com. So, gracias.
Gracias.
Everybody, gracias. Stay safe, stay healthy, and remember, todos somos familia.
Adios, amigos.
Salud.